agent, I said.
Jake frowned. That's not what I want to talk about.
I loved you.
And I loved you. But look how you repaid me. You snuck around looking into my private things. You accused me of kidnapping your son. Jake paced up and down the living room. I could see that he was wearing the same outfit he left for work in, but he'd removed his tweed jacket and rolled up the sleeves of his check shirt. There were droplets of blood on the collar of his shirt, up his neck, and splashed across his cheek.
I don't understand, Jake. I wasn't... We were going to give it another go, weren't we? We talked and sorted it all out.
Don't lie to me, he spat. You've been to my private space. You've seen the garage.
My jaw dropped.
How do you know that?
Remember that phone I bought you for Christmas last year? I nodded. My iPhone, yeah. It has a Find My Phone app on it. I use it to watch your every move, Emma. I know how much you've been coming here, too. What's that for? To complain about me? To talk about me behind my back?
No, Jake, I wouldn't do that.
I heard the pulse of my blood thumping in my ears. I was short of breath and trying hard not to panic. Next to me, Aiden sat very still. I tried to keep calm. If I was calm, maybe I could calm Jake down.
I'm sorry if I betrayed your trust. I swear I never meant to. I just wanted to find out what happened to Aiden. Jake, why don't you call an ambulance for Rob? We can say it was an accident. He fell and hit his head. We can sort all this out later, but Rob is bleeding to death in the hallway and he needs...
That's all you care about, isn't it? Ever since he's come back to Bishoptown, you've been lusting after him like a wide-eyed schoolgirl. It's sick.
He paused and rubbed his temples. For one fleeting moment, I thought about rushing him and knocking him down, but then he was back to pacing, and the determination on his face gave me caution.
There's no way that waster survived that blow. I hit him with Hugh's African warrior statue. The thing's made of stone.
Jake snatched a large stone figure and lifted it above his head. I flinched at the sight of Rob's blood and hair smeared across the face of the African man.
Hugh could come home at any time,
I said, forcing myself to keep my voice level and calm. But Jake just laughed.
Hugh knows how to live. He takes whatever he wants, no matter what. He'll be fucking some 19-year-old in Vegas or something.
I like a man who takes what he wants.
You think that making a mockery of marriage vows is something to be proud of? You think that lying and cheating is admirable?
We do what we have to do to stay in polite society,
he said, sneering at the term.
But we all have desires, don't we? We all have secrets deep down. I bet you didn't know that Hugh was screwing Amy Perry, did you?
I frowned. No, I didn't know that.
She was wild in the sack, according to him. Into some real hardcore stuff. Not like you, my beautiful wife. But I didn't marry you for your abilities between the sheets. You were broken, and I liked that. And no, I don't mean when you jammed that knife into your wrist. I mean before then, before Aiden, before everything. Even at school, I saw who you were before you knew it yourself. You needed guidance. You were like a baby deer walking on ice. Without someone by your side telling you where to step, you'd slip and slide around until you fell through the surface.
He had stopped pacing now. He seemed calmer, but that was even more unnerving than his agitated state.
You needed me, but you turned to that idiot in the hallway.
Please, Jake, if you love me, even a little, call an ambulance for Rob. Let Josie and Aiden go so we can talk on our own.
Jake laughed.
Don't you think I know when you're trying to manipulate me? Do you think I'm stupid? Do you?
No,
I stuttered. Though the adrenaline still pumped through my veins, I was twice as frightened as I was angry. I'd never seen this side to Jake, and it was terrifying. He was dangerous. All this time, I had been sharing my bed with a dangerous man, and I never knew it. My eyes roamed around the room, searching out potential weapons.
There was nothing within reach. He sighed.
I really thought you were everything I ever wanted and ever needed. But now I look at you and I see very little at all, Emma.
I'm carrying your child. My throat rasped as I tried to speak without letting myself cry. Our baby girl.
Yes, I know, he snapped. But do you even care? All you do is whinge and whine about Aiden, who, by the way, is nothing but pathetic and messed up in the head, until you put our baby at risk. You prioritize everything else apart from me and our baby. I thought once we were married you'd finally put all that behind you. The drowned son, the lover who abandoned you, the parents who died. I thought you'd actually moved on and would finally, finally notice me.
But you never could leave it alone, could you? It was always about them and never about me, even though I'm the best thing that's happened to you. Just look at what I've given you. A job with people you like, a home that you love, a lifestyle most women would kill for, and still you can't find it in yourself to be grateful.
I opened my mouth to speak. I wanted to yell at him, to show him there was more to me than he could possibly understand, that he could never break me down in the way he thought he could. But all that came out of my mouth was a whimper. I crumpled forward, clutching my abdomen. Another cramp seized my uterus. My body grew hot from the pain, and I felt sweat forming along my hairline. It started from my back and radiated around me, turning my bump hard as a rock.
Jake,
I said,
you need to call an ambulance. I think I'm in labor.
For the first time, there was a slight twitch of doubt in Jake's expression as his jaw clenched and his eyes narrowed.
It's still a few days until your due date. What do babies care about a due date? Call an ambulance!
He shook his head.
Your waters haven't broken yet. Besides, we haven't finished talking.
I rubbed my stomach and tried not to think about what would happen if I went into labor here in this room, with my ex-boyfriend dying in the corridor and my husband emotionally torturing me, with my son sat still and traumatized to my right and my best friend tied up in one of the rooms upstairs. What had I done to arrive at this lowest point in my life? What mistake had I made not to see this coming?
What is it you wanted to say to me?
I said bitterly.
Are you going to tell me about how you took my son and abused him for a decade? Is that what you want to say? Why did you do it, Jake? Was it some sort of sick, controlling fantasy where you took everything away from me to see what would happen? Am I just a doll to you? A plaything you can experiment with? Or did you want to turn Aiden into some robotic slave to do your bidding for this precise moment so you could reveal to me what an evil fucking man you are? And what about my parents? What did they ever do to you?
You were alone after they died, he said with a smirk. That was useful. My blood was hot with rage.
I hate you! You stalked me! You murdered my parents!
I refused to cry. I would not give him the satisfaction of seeing me cry.
That day when I tried to kill myself, where were you? How did you know?
Recording device, he said, the smile spreading across his face. He relished the fact that he had fooled me.
You're evil,
I repeated. I'm not evil, Emma. I'm just free. I do what I want.
And what you want is to be an art teacher in a comprehensive school. What the hell are you? You're just pathetic.
I don't really care about being a teacher. That's just an easy way to get people to like me. Teachers are warm and cuddly. Art teachers who wear tweed are even cuddlier.
You messed up with that girl in Bournemouth, though, didn't you? You might have manipulated her into not talking about your little affair, but her photo of the both of you was a slip-up.
Katie was young and made mistakes. She was almost as broken as you. She loved to be led. She liked to be controlled. Most women like it.
What have you done with Josie, Jake? Have you hurt her?
My bottom lip trembled. Why didn't I see his disregard for other people? Why had I never noticed how much he hated the world? This was all so hidden from me. He kept it in that garage, along with his true face. That was where he hid his obsession.
Slowly, he walked across the room towards the fireplace and retrieved a shining object from the mantel. I gasped. It was a long, sharp knife, wider than a chef's knife, with a smooth handle made from some sort of ivory-colored material. My stomach twisted into a knot when I realized it was bone. "Hugh gave me this as a present," he said. "It's a hunting knife. He told me you probably wouldn't approve, so I decided to keep it hidden. Seems appropriate to use it now in his home." "Jake," I whispered, "what are you going to do with that thing?" "Finish what I started 10 years ago," he hissed. Chapter 41. My muscles felt like stretched elastic. The hairs stood up on the backs of my arms as Jake tilted and examined the knife in his hand. I tried to ignore a third cramp as it took hold of my womb, squeezing and twisting up my insides. My fist clenched, pressing my fingernails deep into the palms of my hands. "I've wanted to tell you this for a long time, Emma," he smiled, revealing those white teeth I had once found so attractive. "Handsome Hewitt. It's a confession, really. An event that I wasn't proud of at the time, but it grew to be an accomplishment I praised myself for after the dust settled. The thing is, I got away with it. At least I thought I had. The problem is, your son came back, and it's only a matter of time before he starts talking. I'm sure of it." My fingernails dug harder into my skin. I felt warm liquid pool there. "Despite all my best efforts to get rid of him again, you seem determined to keep the little brat around, so I suppose I may as well spill the beans." He laughed. "Not even the little incident in the crib with the paint changed your mind." "That was you," I said. Why was I even surprised? He was clearly capable of anything. "Yes, darling, it was. But going back to the past, I wasn't ever going to tell you, but then you went into my garage and you snooped in places you shouldn't be snooping. You made it so that I've got nothing to lose." The knife blade glinted as he held out his arms and grinned at me. "You've only got yourself to blame now. This all would have been swept under the rug and we could have lived a happy life if you hadn't kept digging. Somewhere down the line, preferably before Aiden grows a pair and starts talking, I'd have ensured Aiden had a little accident. So tragic. But these things happen." Heat washed over me. My chest was tight, making it hard to breathe, but I forced myself to concentrate. I could see how Jake was loving the captive audience, drinking in the way I hung on his every word, waiting for the moment I would finally get some answers. He wasn't going to make this easy for me. He wasn't going to make this quick. He was going to enjoy it. "Let me tell you a story about a feral child. You see, feral children usually have terrible mothers. Those mothers are often too young to be mothers and let their children run riot wherever they feel like it." He paused to see if his words got a reaction from me, but I didn't give him the satisfaction. "When all the other normal children are behaving themselves, feral children do the opposite. Normal children know how to behave when there's a natural disaster like a flood, but fucked-up children like Aiden wander off on their own and decide to play in the river." I kept my mouth firmly closed, waiting for him to tell me. There was an infuriating grin on his face that made my blood boil. He knew he was in control and he was milking every single second of it. "I saw Aiden walk away from the classroom. I saw him slip through the corridors and out of the school." He paused to push his hair back away from his face. Hair that I'd caressed. A face I'd kissed. A body I'd touched. A man I'd made love to over and over again. "I'd been watching you for years. I remember the first day I saw you at school with your dark hair long and luxurious. You were more hesitant than the other girls. You didn't wear those slutty skirts or thongs pulled up above your waistline. You had something about you. You had paint under your fingernails and lowered eyelashes. You blushed when boys tried to talk to you and were oblivious when they were clearly besotted with you. He sighed. You used to be so beautiful. And now you're old, fat, and covered in that disgusting rash. Instinctively, I hid my hands beneath my legs, ashamed. Then I realized that I was looking at a murderer. I pulled my hands back out and scratched them in front of him. I'd been biding my time with you. The incident with Katie had been rushed, and I didn't want that to happen again. Besides, Katie was the appetizer. You were the main course, and I wanted to make sure I was ready to devour you. I retched, but nothing came out of me. Jake seemed oblivious and carried on with his story. But that lump of clay, that walking black hole, Rob, got there first. You needed to be led, and I was going to show you the way, but he was the one who got to you first, and for that I will never forgive him. That's the reason why he's bleeding onto the hallway tiles. That's what happens to people who cross me. Get to the point! I snapped, unable to cope with this for much longer. I scratched at my itching skin, feeling dirty just from listening to him. Next to me, Aiden sat quietly, still and impassive as always. He could be watching cartoons again, not listening to the ramblings of a psychopath. You were tainted when you had Aiden, but I knew I could salvage you. It would just take some breaking to get you where I wanted you. When I saw Aiden slip out of school that day, I followed him at first to see what he was doing. I realized that I might never get him alone like this again. I might never have a chance to do what I'd wanted to do for years. He licked his lips as he relayed the memory. I was already soaked from checking the outside of the school with Simon. I followed your son's red coat through the pouring rain all the way down to the river. There he was, just standing and staring at the gushing water. I thought of my nightmares after Aiden was taken. I thought of that image forever haunting me, Aiden floating beneath the tumultuous waters, Aiden in the still, calm part of the river with his lips blue and his skin white. Jake's fingers gripped the knife even tighter. He lifted his arms in animation as the excitement grew. This was my chance! I knew what it would do to you, and I knew I had to do it. The slate had to be wiped clean, Emma. I needed you to be that broken girl again, the one I fell in love with. You'd become too assured in your role as a mother. I saw how you played with Aiden in the park, and I saw you slowly becoming a family with Rob. You even had the friends I saw us having, Josie and Hugh. Wasn't fair. It was all supposed to be for us. What did you do? I whispered. I pushed him, he said. You did what? I pushed him into the river. I turned to my son. He was blank-faced and staring at me. There were no answers in that face, only more questions. I reached out to him before retracting my hand. Then I moved to face my husband. What happened after you pushed him into the river? I asked. Jake shrugged. I went back to the school. I don't understand. That's because you're stupid. You accuse me of kidnapping your son, but why would I do that? I never wanted him. I wanted you. Aiden just gets in the way. With him around, you have no time for me, or the baby growing inside you. He's an obstacle to me. Who took him? Tell me. I need to know. I begged. Jake just laughed. I don't know. Some chancer who was nearby and saw a kid drowning in the river. They must have fished him out and thanked God because it meant they could keep him in their sick little dungeon or whatever. He was so casual and callous that my stomach lurched and I tasted bile at the back of my throat. It wasn't you, I whispered. Of course not, he said. I wanted him out of the way, like I wanted your parents out of the way. I threw my head into my hands. I'd slept in the same bed as the man who had tried to kill my son and who had also succeeded in killing my parents. My skin was full of ants. My body was cold down to the core. I shivered, but I had to keep my head. I had to try and stay in control. I had to put all of that aside and focus on saving the lives of the people in the house.
You said you were going to finish what you started 10 years ago,
I said, lifting my face to meet his gaze.
What did that mean?
The laughter faded from Jake's face, and instead his eyes glassed over like marbles. Without his usual amiable grin, he was terrifying. He angled his chin down, and dark shadows flooded his eyes, turning him into the cliched movie villain. But this wasn't your average bad guy. He was my husband, and the father of my child. He was the man who rubbed my feet at the end of the day and brought me a hot chocolate when I had my period. He was the man who laughed at my jokes and teased me when I mispronounced a word. He held my hand through horror movies and chatted to my friends. He listened to me when I talked about my past, and he was a shoulder to cry on when it was the anniversary of my parents' death. He had been everything to me, but all of it had been a complete and utter lie. You've ruined it all, Emma. The cold edge of his voice was like a razor blade running down my spine. I can't fix it anymore. I can't break you into the woman I need you to be. It's too late for all of us. I'm going to finish what I started 10 years ago, and then I'm going to move on to you. He took a step forward with the knife gripped in his hand. Chapter 42. There's a kind of strength in the weakness that comes from hitting the absolute lowest you can go. There have been many moments in my life where I've hit such depths that I thought I would never claw my way back out of them. Jake talked about owning the darkness within him and taking what he wanted, but he wasn't the only one in the room experienced in dealing with darkness. When I look back on my time in that room, the minutes that stretched on forever, I realized that Jake had made the same mistake over and over again in his life, and that mistake was underestimating me. Because he was wrong about me. I wasn't a broken bird coming back for a beating. I wasn't someone he could break over and over again without a fight. I'd never fought because he'd never given me anything to fight. He'd taken the best of my life and tossed it away, but he'd never shown me what I needed to be shown. He'd never revealed himself for the person he really was. But now that he had, I could fight him. I finally had a physical manifestation of all the pain I'd suffered for the last decade. When he rushed at Aiden with the knife, I knew what I had to do. As Aiden cowered away from Jake, I threw myself between them, holding my hands up to shield my son. Jake's knife caught the palm of my hand, and I screamed as it tore through my skin. But I didn't give up. I pushed against the knife with one hand, my skin sliced open by the blade, and reached up to hit Jake on the nose with the other. The blow caught Jake off guard, and he staggered back, giving me a slight reprieve. My injured hand was covered in blood, but I couldn't let my eyes linger on the wound because Jake was readying himself for another attack.
"I was going to kill you last,"
Jake said, "but this works too." The sparkling glint of anger in his eyes had changed to a dull, grim determination. I knew he was stronger and bigger than me, but I also knew I wanted to live for both of my children. I quickly checked around me for weapons, but there wasn't anything, only a TV remote and a magazine. Even the lamp was on the other side of the room with Jake blocking my way. He came at me again, throwing his force against me and pushing me back, colliding with my pregnant belly in a way that made me gasp for breath. But I managed to throw my weight to my right side, duck beneath his armpit, and then push him full force with both hands, hissing with pain as my injured hand made contact with his side. Jake tumbled to the floor, but he still had hold of the knife. I knelt down on his chest and pressed on his wrist with my full weight, but my fingers were slippy with blood. Jake hit me across the face with his free hand, a blow so hard I felt a crunch in my nose. I ignored it and sank my teeth into his wrist. Jake beat the back of my head and roared with pain, my mouth filled with the rusting taste of warm blood. I sank my teeth deeper and deeper until I felt his grip loosen on the knife. He finally managed to throw me back, but I took a chunk out of his wrist with me and a spray of blood hit me in the face. My bloody fingers couldn't grip the knife and it flew from my hand to the back of the room. Jake, face sweaty and contorted, lifted his leg and I recognized that he meant to kick me in the stomach. I rolled to the right and struggled up onto my feet.
Aiden, we need to go!
My son was sat on the sofa, his eyes wide and his face set in horror. I quickly wiped away some of the blood from my mouth as Jake climbed to his feet, holding his wrist.
Just let us go, Jake!
I pleaded. I was prepared to do anything to keep myself and my children alive.
I can't do that, Emma.
As he ran towards me, I saw the bloodied statue that Jake had used on Rob. I ducked down and scooped it up as Jake's punch missed my face by inches and connected with my shoulder instead. The force almost knocked me off my feet, but Jake was sporting a deep injury on his wrist, and that had slowed him down, so I was able to lift the statue and throw it at him. Jake's expression was filled with surprise as the heavy stone figure hit him squarely on the chin before falling onto his foot. He was still screaming from the pain as I threw myself sideways at him. We tumbled onto the carpet, Jake pushing my face up to the ceiling away from him, groping for my neck. I managed to find the warrior statue and took it in both hands as Jake's fingers wrapped around my throat. I lifted the stone figure and a pop of anger exploded inside me. I wanted him dead. This was the man who had lied to me every day. He'd violated my trust. He'd stalked me when I was a vulnerable young woman. He'd murdered my parents and tried to murder my son, all so he could break me and mold me into whatever he wanted. He had controlled me and hunted me. There was a lot of hate inside me and a lot of anger, and the taste of his blood in my mouth wasn't enough. I wanted to see him suffer. I brought the statue down onto his head and his hands loosened. I lifted it and did it again. This time Jake's hands fell from my throat. A trickle of blood rolled down his forehead until it pooled on the carpet and in his ear. I lifted the bust again. And then I stopped. Aiden was singing. It was the same song I'd heard while I was arguing with Rob. His voice was soft. He sang high notes with ease, rising and falling with the melody. He had a beautiful voice, like a choir boy's voice, and it made me cry. I dropped the statue and climbed off Jake whilst holding my pregnant bump. Jake was still. I'd killed him. I clenched and unclenched my fists, trying to calm myself before I bent down and searched for Jake's mobile phone. It wasn't there. I glanced across at the house phone on the corner table of the room. The wire had been cut.
Aiden,
I said,
we need to go now.
But Aiden wasn't on the sofa anymore. He was standing by the door of the room, staring at me. His mouth opened and closed to sing the quiet song and tears trickled down his face. I stepped towards him, holding out my hands for him to take.
Aiden!
He backed away from me. That was when I realized that Aiden wasn't scared of Jake anymore. He was scared of me. His eyes flicked from me to the corridor and back to me in rapid motion, and I realized he was thinking of a way to escape.
We'll go together, Aiden, I said. I'm going to find a phone and call an ambulance and the police, and then I'm going to see if your dad and Josie are okay. Then we're going to go and wait in the car for the police to come. Is that okay with you, Aiden?
I didn't want to spend a second longer in this house. But his song only grew louder. His body was trembling, and he shook his head. He glanced back to the corridor.
You can't go out that way, I said. The door's locked.
Aiden clenched his fists and ran at me. His sudden movement took me completely by surprise, which was why he managed to knock me off my feet. My stomach cramped with another contraction, which gave Aiden time to search through Jake's pockets and retrieve the key for Josie's front door. By the time I'd managed to sit up, Aiden had disappeared from the room and I could hear the key in the lock.
No!
I called, but it was no use. The door was open. I crawled over to the corner where Jake had kicked my broken phone. The screen was smashed, but I could still scroll through the options. I pulled myself up onto my feet and hurried through the corridor where Rob was laid out on the carpet. I bent low to check his pulse. When Rob lifted his head, I almost cried out.
Follow him,
he croaked. I nodded.
I'm calling an ambulance.
It hurt my heart to leave him there, but I had to follow Aiden. I hurried out of Josie's house as fast as I could, dialing 999 on the phone. Luckily, Aiden hadn't thought to lock me in.
I've been attacked at my friend's house,
I said after the operator took my call.
My husband attacked my ex-boyfriend. I think he's badly hurt. I don't know. He's hurt my friend. I think she's tied up upstairs, but I haven't seen her. He could have killed her. I think I killed him, my husband. I hit him with a statue, but it was because he was going to kill my son. He had a knife. We need an ambulance. I have to go. My son has run away.
I relayed the address and hung up, not even bothering to give my name. As I hurried down the gravel path, I could just make out Aiden's form moving through the dark. He was heading down towards the road. I rushed along as fast as I could while scrolling through my phone. I had to call DCI Stevenson. He was the only one who knew the case. He answered on the first call.
It's Emma. Jake attacked me, Rob and Aiden. I think I killed him. He's at Josie Barrett's house. Aiden has gone running off. I'm following him.
No, Emma, stay where you are. I'm on my way.
I have to follow him.
I stopped as another contraction rippled through me. I had no idea how often they were coming. Every 5 minutes? I couldn't tell.
Emma, are you all right?
I'm in labour.
Shit. Stay where you are. We'll have an ambulance.
I've already called it.
Up ahead, barely visible in the pouring rain, Aiden took a sharp turn away from the road. I staggered down the steep hill to see better.
I think Aiden's heading into the woods.
Rough Valley, Stevenson asked.
Yeah, I think he's going to go in.
I'm on my way.
Did you find the garage?
I asked.
Yes, he said.
Good,
I replied and hung up. I couldn't keep up the pace while I was distracted by talking. I saw Aiden slow down as he entered the boundary into Rough Valley. He seemed to be trying to figure out which direction to take. That suggested that there was somewhere he wanted to go. There was a purpose to him entering the woods. My shoes slipped down a grassy bank as I followed him towards the dark, thick trees. It was muddy underfoot. My clothes were soaked, but at least the downpour had washed away most of the blood from my face. My head was throbbing from Jake's fists. My hand was sore and bleeding from the deep cut across my palm, but I was determined to keep my boy within eyeshot. He had been taken from me 10 years ago, and I was not going to allow that to happen again. I never wanted him out of my sight ever again. I hurried into the trees. The wet grass stuck to my jeans. I was moving as fast as I possibly could given the circumstances, and I couldn't help but wonder if any woman had ever been through anything like this while being in labour. Then I realised, of course they had. Of course. Women gave birth in war-torn countries. Women were forced to run for their lives. Children survived the most horrific of circumstances. Humans are strong, resilient, and determined creatures. I gritted my teeth and staggered on, determined that my baby would wait for me. I could hang on and hang on until I was sure Aiden was going to be safe too. The sun was beginning to set. Rain hammered down onto the fallen leaves, turning the ground into mulch. Despite the freezing rain, I was warm. The effort of moving faster than my pregnant body was accustomed to had taken its toll, and my muscles ached, but I was resolute in my purpose. I would find my son. I would take him to safety. He moved swiftly, and that made it difficult to follow the back of his red jumper. I kept thinking about the day they pulled his red coat from the river. That wouldn't happen today. It would never happen again. I'd make sure of it. Aiden slowed down and made 3 jagged turns in opposite directions. I could see that he was trying to figure out where to go.
Aiden!
I called.
Please don't be scared, just let me walk with you.
He turned to stare at me, ghoul-like, in the dark forest. His pale face contrasted against the almost pitch-black background of the close thicket of trees.
Talk to me.
I said.
I know you can. Please, talk to me and tell me what you're trying to do. I want to help you.
But he didn't speak. He went back to moving through the trees, slipping through them like a spectre. A contraction tore through me and I doubled over in pain, trying my best to ignore it so I could follow Aiden through the forest. To my surprise, after the pain had faded, I looked up to see Aiden had stopped. He was facing me. When I recovered, he started moving again. He wanted me to follow him.
Chapter 43. Sometimes, when I hold Aiden close, I imagine that I can smell the scent of the forest from that night. It's not a completely pleasant smell. There's the fresh scent of pine and rainwater, but along with it comes the must of wet leaves, the mildewed earthiness of mud, and the metallic hint of blood. A shiver runs down my spine every time I remember that night and how my clothes were sodden from the rain. My feet ache from the memory of slipping through wet leaves and mud. I'm reminded by the constriction in my chest of how short of breath I was. My abdomen clenches as I remember the pain of my contractions. Would I prefer to be able to hold my son and not think of these things? Of course. As much as I'd like to close my eyes without seeing Rob's blood on Josie's corridor tiles or Jake's dull, determined gaze as he approached me with Hugh's hunting knife. As I followed my son through the forest, I knew that whatever it was Aiden wanted to show me, it would change everything. Part of me was dreading that change. Part of me ached for it. I needed answers, and Aiden was the key to those answers, as he had always been. But it seemed right that the journey was as arduous as it had been. This was Aiden's story, not mine, and it had been a long and harrowing one for him, so to live through even the smallest iota of the kind of pain he had endured made me feel closer to him. I slowly began to close the gap between us, and I longed to slip my hand into his and feed from the warmth of him, but I knew not to. I was in labor. There was no doubt about that. My contractions were frequent, but my labor with Aiden had been stretched out over many hours, so I could only hope that Aiden had time to show me what he needed to show me before we found the police. But the pain was worsening as I continued on through the woods. I had to stop and clutch a tree as another contraction pulsed through me.
I can't keep up, Aiden!
I felt my phone buzz from the pocket of my soaked jeans, but I ignored it. No doubt DCI Stevenson was hoping to get me to stop what I was doing and turn back, but there was no going back now. I wouldn't be able to find my way out of this place even if I wanted to. All I could do was follow my son as the forest grew ever darker. Aiden stopped, his head turned left, then right, and I sensed that he had seen something that he recognized. There was a very tall birch to my right set up on a slight mound. Aiden regarded that tree long enough to make me wonder if he had seen it before. I took a moment to stop and catch my breath as my son collected himself. I examined the wound on my hand. It would need stitches, but the bleeding had slowed down. I felt lightheaded and tired, but I wanted to press on. He stepped onto a narrow path next to a shallow drop. After passing a row of half a dozen trees, the path widened out into a clearing. Rough Valley Forest was a tangled heap of trees and roots, which is why the clearing was surprising. Most of the land was owned by the National Trust, but the Trust had sold off pieces of land to property developers, hoping to create more homes in Bishoptown. There had been a mediocre protest about the plans, but most people didn't really care about the forest. It wasn't a pretty place. It was dark and overgrown, and walking through it sent a shiver up your spine. It wasn't a place for dog walkers and hikers. Aiden carried on through the clearing and I followed, almost tripping on a smooth and slippery patch underfoot. I turned around to see what it was. It looked like a few trees had been felled around here. I'd slipped on the stump left over. I pressed on, trying to catch up with Aiden. He seemed to know exactly where he was heading now. Whatever this place was, he knew it, and he traversed it with ease. I held on to my bump as I continued into the center of the clearing, silently willing the child inside me to stay put for a while longer. I'd already put that child through hell, but I had to push those thoughts from my mind as I watched Aiden. He was acting strangely. He seemed to be kicking leaves, which was not something I was expecting him to do after the struggle back at the Barrett's house. I was beginning to wonder if he had finally cracked.
Then my paranoid mind conjured up the idea that it was some sort of signal and that Aiden's kidnapper was about to stride out from the trees with a machete to cut the baby out of my belly. But it was none of those things. Aiden was clearing the leaves away from some sort of door built into the ground. I could see it poking out of the earth now. It was perhaps 3 or 4 feet high and built into a natural slope. I moved over to help Aiden clear leaves, branches and mud away from the opening. Didn't want anyone to see. I staggered back. My hands were trembling. It was the first time I had heard my son speak. It was the first time I'd heard his voice, his speaking voice, and not the strange, high-pitched singing voice. He sounded like a teenager, and that brought me almost to my knees. Yes, I'd come to see Aiden as older than the little boy taken from me 10 years ago, but with his diminished size, I still hadn't thought of him as 16 years old. Then he spoke, and suddenly he was almost a man. It wasn't a deep voice, but it wasn't a child's voice either. I stood stupidly next to the strange door with my mouth opening and closing. I wanted him to do it again, but I didn't want to frighten him. He was in some sort of trance, and I was concerned that if I spoke, I would break the spell that had been cast over the still forest that night. The only sound was the rustling of leaves as Aiden cleared the leaves away. When he was done, he clutched the handle and pushed. Still open. This time I pounced on his words and committed them to memory. Joy flooded through my veins and my heart swelled. I'd waited so long to hear his voice. He had to push the door hard and the hinges squeaked as it opened, but I could see that it had been used often. The moonlight glinted on the dark metallic surface. This was it. This was what Aiden had been painting in therapy. This was the dark grey from his nightmares. On the other side of the door was where Aiden had been held captive for 10 years. I tried to steady my breathing. There was a step down cut out of the slope of the hill. Once I stepped down, the door wasn't quite so small, and I was able to follow Aiden through that small metal door by ducking my head down. I was careful not to touch the handle. This was important now. This was the part where all the pieces would come together and I would finally get justice for Aiden.
Don't shut.
Of course not, I thought. That door would never shut again. The door opened into a narrow passageway that descended down several cement steps. I resisted the urge to place my hand on the cement wall of the passageway to steady myself in the dark. I had to be careful not to contaminate any evidence. At the bottom of the steps was a second door. This one hung open, leaving the doorway exposed like a missing tooth, obviously vacated in a hurry. It was when I reached this door that the foul stench hit my nostrils. Aiden hit a switch, but nothing happened. He groped around the hallway before lifting something from a hook. I heard the clunk of a switch and a bright light flickered on. I winced at the sudden brightness. Aiden walked into the room and pressed on a lantern. He moved around the room, turning on several small lanterns, the torchlight bobbing around as he made his way around the place. With more light, I could see my surroundings. I was in a small room about the size of a large living room that had been partitioned into two areas. One of those areas had been sectioned off with what looked like a heavy metal barred fence that had been welded in place. Someone had cut into the bars to create a door that was hanging open. On the ground, near to the open door, was a heavy chain and a padlock. Inside the cage was a small mattress with a crumpled duvet on top, a pile of books, a small desk and a plastic chair next to it, a sink, a tiny fridge, and a toilet. They were the kind of sinks and toilets you would find in a caravan with pumps instead of regular taps. "This is where I sleep," Aiden said, pointing to the bed. Every hair on my arms and scalp prickled. I had thought I couldn't get any colder, but I was wrong. Looking at this room and hearing my son say those words brought the severity of his ordeal home, and I wondered whether I would ever be warm again. Would a hot bath or shower ever take away the chilling sensation of knowing and understanding exactly how cruel a human being could be? I pictured something like this in my mind. I'd actually pictured worse. I'd had nightmares about cages and chains and stained mattresses. Somehow the reality of seeing my son's cage was worse than anything I had imagined. I couldn't move my body, but I forced myself to look around the room. My eyes trailed the length of the place as Aiden's torch roamed from corner to corner. I watched as the torch moved from the barred area to the things that were around the rest of the room. I followed the beam of light as it moved towards the misshapen lump in the corner and then quickly looked away. I didn't want to see that yet. Not properly. And instead took in the fan, the ventilation grates on the ceiling, the leaking freezer, the small armchair, the shabby toys, the dirty clothes, the unplugged heater, the wall of crayon drawings that I never got to receive from my own child. Of all the disgusting facts I knew about what had happened to my son, part that disturbed me more than anything was that this had been a home. This was where my son had grown up. My knees weakened, but I forced myself to stay upright. This is Beaver the Bear. Got too old for him, though. I drew that picture. It's the Great Wall of China. I had my picnic there. This one is a mountain, see? That's the heater. I'm allowed it on for 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes at night. I can't use it more or the generator will run out. No one knew. 10 years and no one knew this place existed. I never knew. How did he do it? My eyes moved across the room to the lump in the corner. Aiden? Who is that? But Aiden was distracted by trying to pull one of the pictures off the wall. This one is you. I drew a lot of you at the start. You don't look the same now. Aiden, who is it? Who brought you here? The walls were too close, I couldn't breathe. Every part of my body felt heavy with the knowledge that I knew who it was, and I should have guessed earlier. I'd been so stupid. Why hadn't I figured it out? Oh, yeah, him. Aiden sounded sad. I watched his thoughts go. I didn't want to, but I wanted to leave. My voice shook as I asked the question. What's his name, sweetheart? But Aiden looked down at my feet instead. Did you wee, Mummy? I'd barely noticed the warm water spread over my jeans and down my legs. Now that I glanced down, I saw that my waters had broken all over my shoes, leaving a puddle of murky fluid spreading across the floor. Chapter 44. Aiden.
He should be here by now. I checked the clock. It's 9 p.m. He said 7 p.m. Wednesday, champ. 7 on the dot, you can cope till then. You've got food in the fridge. The generator's all charged up. It's only 3 days, mate. Okay. You've managed that long before. It's worse when he doesn't come. Then he comes and it's worse again. But when I'm alone for days, I'm scared. When I was little, I just felt cold and lonely. I thought of Mum and Dad and Nana and all the kids in my class. Even annoying little Rosie, the one who used to steal my red crayon. I wish they were all here. Then I got older and I started thinking other thoughts. What if the generator broke? What if the electricity goes out and I'm stuck in the dark? What if the ventilator clogs up and I suffocate to death? But the worst that had happened so far was the toilet flush breaking, or the time I got a stomach bug. Both those times he threw the cleaning products into the cage and watched me clean up from the other side of the bunker, holding a scarf over his mouth and nose. At least it gave me something to do. There's never anything to do, and that makes me crazy. Sometimes he brings me books. I asked for pens and pencils, but one time I jabbed the pencil in my arm and he only brought me crayons after that. I draw pictures with them, but I want to learn to get better. I can't do that with wax crayons. Sometimes he cuts my hair. Sometimes he brings down a tub and pours hot water into it so I can have a bath. He tells me he loves me, and sometimes I believe it. But I don't want to stay here, and I never have. That's why he makes sure I'm locked up in the cage every night. Then he locks me in from the main door. I hear him walk up the steps before there's a clunk. I think there are two doors. I'll spend hours wondering where I am. I draw pictures of what I think it looks like. When he comes into the room, I see the mud on his boots, and so I know we're outside somewhere. Maybe it's a field. Maybe I'm on a farm. I don't remember much about the day I was taken. One minute I was looking at the river, the next I woke up on a bed surrounded by metal bars. I didn't understand anything. I cried and cried for Mum, but she never came. I guess she doesn't know where I am, because I think she'd come if she did. I asked for a map once, but he didn't bring it. I guess he forgot. I wanted him to show me where we were on the map. Mum used to show me maps all the time. She'd show me pictures on the computer of different places in the world, and I always said that I wanted to go there. I used to try and think of ways to get out. He used to let me out of the cage sometimes, but he was big and strong, and if I tried anything, I got a smack round the mouth. I've been trying stuff a lot recently. I don't know why. I'm changing, I guess. I'm getting bigger, and I don't like it down here anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of him. He keeps the keys in his pocket. 2 weeks ago, I tried to hit him with a plate, but he saw what I was going to do and pulled the plate from my hands. After that, he gave me paper plates. I'm not allowed knives or anything sharp. I'm not allowed shoes with shoelaces. I have to eat cereal and bread and fruit all the time. Nothing that needs knives and forks. Unless I'm supervised by him. He's changed too. He looks at me differently. He doesn't do the stuff he used to. He says I'm getting big and that I look all wrong. He mumbles to himself about being tired when he thinks I'm not listening. He looks tired. I don't think he likes keeping me a secret anymore. Sometimes I wonder if he'll just never come back. Then I'll run out of food, electricity, water. I'll die. There were times when I thought it might be nice to die. At least then I might get to go somewhere else, but I don't know for sure, so I decided not to. I might one day get out of my cage, but I might not go anywhere when I die, so it seemed too risky. It's 9:15. This is it. He's never coming back. I've almost run out of food, and I'm cold. My shirts and jumpers are all too small for me. The nights are colder lately. Maybe that means winter. I remember winter outside the bunker. I remember making a snowman and throwing snowballs. Sometimes he shows me movies on his phone. I like the Christmas movies the best. I like watching the happy families making snowmen and snow angels. They make me cold. So I only watch them when it's warm in the bunker. I walk back and forth in my cage trying to keep warm. I press the button on my LED light. On, off, on, off. The thunk. The first door. A scrape. The key. The door opens. He's here.
Hiya, mate. Sorry I'm late.
He's always friendly like that. I don't talk back.
Brought you a treat. Pizza.
He grins at me. I don't want it too, but my mouth waters. I'm so hungry my tummy hurts.
It's a bit cold. It's a walk from the car to get here. Should have built this place closer.
He always complains. Especially when he has to fill up the water tank.
How you doing, mate? You look cold. You should wrap up in the duvet when you're cold.
There's something wrong. He's avoiding my eye and I don't know why. He's never brought pizza to the cage before. Why is he doing this? I stare hungrily at the pizza. I cross my arms and try to figure out why something feels wrong.
"Want to come out here and eat?"
he asks. I nod. He puts the pizza box on the table and reaches into his pocket for the key. His fingers are shaking. Why is he trembling like he's scared? He never has been before. Not even right at the beginning. It always frightens me that he's so calm and in control. Never liked that. Used to make me think about what else he could do. What was he capable of? I decided he was capable of anything very early on. And that was why I did everything he told me to do. No matter what. It takes him a few attempts to unlock the cage door. He's fumbling with his keys. He keeps his head angled away from me. I stand away like I always do. I'm not allowed near the door to my cage. I have to keep my hands out in front of me where he can see them, otherwise he's forced to hurt me like he did the time he stamped on my ankle. Or he tells me he'll put me back in shackles like at the beginning. Stay there, Aiden. Wait at the back for a moment. Doesn't feel right. He's different today. I've been wondering for a while whether he's trying to figure something out, like he's been struggling to make a decision. Now, watching him, it seems to me that he's made a decision, and it isn't a good one. It isn't a decision like whether to eat a pizza or Chinese takeaway. It's something horrible. I can feel it. My insides are all squirmy, like they're moving. I'm not hungry anymore. I just want to throw up. The door swings open and he stands there looking at me. There are tears in his eyes. You're a good boy, Aiden. You've always been a good boy. We've loved each other, haven't we? You've loved me. I love you. I don't answer. I'm not sure I know what love is anymore. I don't think it's this, though. I don't think love should make you feel dirty like I do now. He takes a step back, with his eyes all shiny and wet. He's looking at me now. He won't stop looking at me. His arm reaches behind him and his fingers fumble with the pizza box. I don't think there's pizza in there. The lid flips open and he grabs the wooden bat inside, like the kind I used to play sports with. Rounders, that's what it's called. We ran to bases after hitting the ball with a bat. I was always good. I got picked first. I cower away from him. That squirming feeling in my tummy is gone. Instead, I feel like a large cold hand is gripping my stomach, squeezing tighter and tighter. I'm sorry, mate, he says. But I have to finish it. I can't go on like this anymore. You're too old now. It's time to stop. I want to let you go, but I can't. I just can't. I'm sorry. I wanted to get a gun, you know, to make it quicker, but I don't know how to shoot one. I tried to learn about pills and poisons, but they can go so wrong, and I didn't want to do that to you, mate, so I'm going to do it like this. One quick blow. I can do this. I can end it this way. I know you want to die. You tried that time with a pencil. You could have hurt me, but you did it to yourself instead. This way, we both get what we want, don't we? I lift my hand to my face and realize that I'm crying. My throat is raw. You don't really want me to die, I say. He shakes his head. No, I don't. But this is the way it has to end. I still miss the times before. I miss the camping holiday. He lets out a sob. I know you do. But I don't. This has been everything. You've made it so I could live. You took my life, I reply. I don't love you. Snot trickles out of his nose. Don't say that, mate. His head lowers and he pushes his blonde hair away from his eyes. He wipes his nose with the back of his hand. He's in his smart clothes today. A soft maroon jumper and trousers with a crease down the middle. He looks like someone from the telly. Someone who belongs inside the movies on his tiny phone screen. A person with their life all sorted. Doctors, lawyers, businessmen, he's one of those.